This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen. One question has been bothering Julian Crandall-Hollick during his trip down Ganga, the River Ganges. Hindus believe Ganga water has extraordinary powers. Does it really? The Indian Emperor Akbar called the water of the Ganges, or Gangajal, the water of immortality. And he always traveled with a supply. The British East India Company used only Gangajal on their ships during the three-month journey back to England because the water stayed fresh and sweet. Indians have always claimed Gangajal prevents disease, and they still do. Are these old wives' tales? Or is there some special substance in the water of the Ganges that science can identify? Today, Julian Crandall-Hollick goes in search of the mysterious factor X.
How cold is that water?
-2 degrees.
-2 degrees,
sir. Sriram couples come from Mumbai to bathe at Gangotri, the source of Ganga.
Why do you come and have a bathe in this water?
I believe it's God.
I'm bathing here today because there is a tradition that I believe in that if you bathe in the waters of the Ganges, you can purify yourself.
My friend Nidish swears by Gangajal for a slightly different reason.
Have you drunk Gangajal?
Many times. Without Gangajal, we cannot even think of our survival. Gangajal is everything for Hindus.
And you've never been ill?
Never.
Nidish remembers his grandfather's last moments. It's the custom to place 2 drops of Gangajal inside a dying man's mouth.
So we put him down, and then a few drops of Gangajal we put in his mouth. Then he died.
Muni Sirka in Calcutta remembers her grandmother would go down to bathe in Ganga every morning, rain or shine.
So we used to ask her, why do you have to go every day and bathe in Ganga River? Why? Then she said, if you bathe in the Ganga every day, that will cleanse you of all sins and diseases. Not only sins, but of diseases also.
Have you got Gangajal there?
Ganga ki pani aap liye? Yes.
This is the Sangam at Allahabad, where the Yamuna and Ganga meet. This family have come for the day from Jhansi, south of Kanpur, to bathe and purify themselves. They're taking back Gangajal for various rituals, but also for an important and practical reason.
This Ganga is coming up from the Gamu. And here, it's still fresh and very sacred. And if you take this water and keep it for some time, you will see there will be no insect or any germ there yet.
A river for all seasons, cleansing humans of sin, speeding the dead soul onward, preventing disease and never going bad. In India, there are often connections between mythology and hard science. But is there any hard evidence that Ganga really does have special scientific properties? The obvious place to start is in the Himalayas. Here are some of the candidates: wild plants, radioactive rocks, unusually cold water, the velocity of mountain streams. But there's one major problem with all four of them. Since 1854, almost all Ganga has been siphoned off for irrigation as it leaves the Himalayas. So what you get in India's heartland is a broad, shallow, sluggish river fed from Nepal and India's central highlands, just like any other river. End of story? Not quite.
Right from very ancient times, people have been thinking that Ganga have got some special properties which other rivers do not have. One such special property is that when you store Ganga water in a closed container, it doesn't putrefy.
In other words, there's oxygen in the water, a lot of oxygen. So organic materials such as human waste or vegetable matter...
When this is put in the Ganges, it is assimilated by the Ganges in a very short time compared to other rivers. I'm not saying that it immediately vanishes, but what I'm trying to say is that its assimilative ability is about 15 to 25 times more than any other river. These are some of the very important special properties of the Ganga, which any other river doesn't have.
D.S. Bhagavas spent a lifetime doing experiments up and down Ganga in the plains. Organic material usually exhausts the available oxygen. It outlives it and then starts putrefying. but not in Ganga.
There is some material present in the Ganga water which prevents their survival.
To prove this, Bhagava did a simple experiment.
We took two beakers, in one Ganga water as it is, other one we boiled the Ganga water, then cooled it, and then we filled it. In both these beakers we added pathogens.
In the boiled water, the pathogens survived. In the unboiled Ganga water, they died.
There is some material which is acting upon the bacteria and not letting them survive. So this material we refer to as disinfectant.
Bhagava conducted this simple experiment at Varanasi in the plains.
So this shows that the material which is responsible for preventing the pathogens to survive is not coming from the Himalayas. This material is picked up on the way. It is picked up from the bed.
Bhagava claims that Yamuna, which flows less than 100 miles away and will eventually merge with Ganga at Allahabad, simply doesn't have this property. What it is, he doesn't know. He's never been able to isolate it.
And it is a mysterious material. Sometimes I call it a magic kind of material.
And there's the little matter of the river's extraordinary ability to retain oxygen. By Bhagava's calculations, 25 times higher than Yamuna or any other river in the world.
The question is, why does it have such a high rate of oxygen?
Right. How does the river purify itself? And why does it have such a high rate of self-purification? That means high rate of natural purification compared to any other river.
There are various possible chemical causes once you've dismissed temperature and velocity. The ones I like involve words like exocellular polymers, coagulants, colloidal material. Essentially, they all suggest molecules clumped together and remove most of the organic waste dumped into Ganga in less than 60 minutes. What's left is quickly assimilated by the bacteria in the river.
So both these factors are there, and because of both these factors, the Ganga River gets cleaned up in no time.
And he maintains the only logical place it can come from is the riverbed itself. Mm-hmm. 10 days later, we stopped the night at a tiny ashram on Ganga. The Swami, Ramesh Chand, says he knows exactly what this mysterious factor X is.
There is this Gandhak, in English it is sulfur. And that's why no germs can live in this water, you know, or pollute the water.
You're saying that sulfur is in the riverbed?
Yes, it is on the riverbed also. Because when the water is flowing, it is getting that sulfur from the bed also. It's all through.
Ramesh Chand says it's all in the ancient religious texts.
I got this information from Veda and all the Puranas, you know. I don't know why scientific people, they don't know about this. But it is written there, the sulfur is the only thing, you know, which is keeping this river unique.
His argument is dashed the following week by A.C. Shukla, a retired biology professor in Kanpur. He notes that sulfur in massive quantities would kill everything in the river, including something called bacteriophage, which he says comes from the Himalayas.
This bacteriophage, which comes up from the glacier downwards, it has the capacity of cleansing the Ganga water from all kinds of bacteria.
And that's not its only remarkable quality, according to Shukla.
The growth of this killing virus is very rapid. It comes up in the water, it grows and multiplies and then vanishes automatically in 24 hours' time.
Here today, gone tomorrow. A giant tidal wave pouring down from the Himalayas, sweeping Ganga clean of all disease. Extraordinary. Unfortunately, Shukla says it'll all soon be a thing of the past because the Terry Dam in the high Himalaya will impound all the water from the glacier. And he dismisses Bhagava's theories about something in the riverbed as impossible. I've struck a dead end.
The Greek word phagos is to eat, essentially bacteria eaters, I guess that's the simplest way to describe it.
And then I strike pay dirt. I run into Dr. J. Ramachandran, a molecular biologist and entrepreneur in Bangalore. And suddenly a great deal is explained by someone who really knows.
Bacteriophages are highly specific parasites that are not living entities, but they are extremely specific structures that can attach to the surface of particular bacteria and have the ability to inject their DNA into the bacteria.
They're bacterial viruses that are very specific to a particular bacteria. So only a cholerophage is attracted to the cholera bacteria, a dysenteryphage to a dysentery bacteria, and so on. Once inside the host, they multiply very, very fast and destroy all the machinery that makes a bacteria active.
At the end of 13 minutes, a single bacteriophage entering a bacterial host would have multiplied into 100 to 300 new bacteriophages.
And then the fun really starts. The new phages burst out of their host, seeking more bacteria. If they find them, and at a vast bathing festival on the Ganga they certainly will, they invade these new hosts.
A single bacteriophage becomes 100, then becomes 10,000, million, and so on.
Phages are in fact large pieces of DNA, and the most common molecular structures on Earth. They're everywhere, especially in water.
It can hang around in shady waters for years. What happens is you don't notice it because there is no host. It'll only express its presence when there is a bacterial host.
So phages are absolutely not unique to Ganga or to India. You can find them anywhere in the world. But what is unique to Ganga are the extraordinary concentrations of human bodies at festivals with all that bacteria.
When millions of people bathe, suddenly there is a huge increase in bacterial concentration. They're kind of jostling for space and they will encounter sooner or later the appropriate phage.
This could be over in 12 hours?
In 12 hours easily, right, or 24 hours. But as soon as the first event happens, then it's a devastation that is very exponential.
It's never a massacre. Bacteria can swim away, phages can't. They go back to sitting and waiting. But it does clear up one mystery.
When you have these huge numbers of people, 5-6 million people bathing at the Kumbh Melas, there is never an epidemic reported.
Of course bacteria are around, many harmful. But epidemics tend to be low level. It's only when the numbers suddenly multiply and the pandemic is on the point of erupting that phages swing into action.
And what the phages do is to bring it down to an acceptable or below the level of infection until the population raises again. And so we have this ebb and flow happening.
In other words, a state of natural equilibrium. That solves one of our mysteries, why Ganga does not spread cholera or typhoid or any of the other great waterborne epidemics. It doesn't mean it's healthy. But it's not that unhealthy either. It also explains Bhagwa's Beaker experiment. Phages destroyed the pathogen. But when the water was boiled, the phages were destroyed, so they couldn't do their work. But what it doesn't explain is why Ganga alone has this extraordinary ability to retain oxygen. That mystery remains. I'm Julian Crandall-Hollick.
Next week, Julian Crandall-Hollick takes us to a village in West Bengal that has disappeared. He'll ask, who's to blame, Ganga or man? The mysterious Factor X was edited and produced by Tina Morris and Fernando Ruiz del Prado. Julian's account of the whole trip, Ganga, a journey down the River Ganges, has just been published by Island Press. You can learn more about Julian Crandall-Hollick's 5-month journey at our website, npr.org. Many of you have written in during the past few weeks to ask about the music in this series. Julian Crandall-Hollick commissioned it from Indian violinist L. Subramaniam for an earlier series of his called Apna Street. We liked it so much we decided to use it again for this series. It's not available on a commercial CD, but you can get it from Julian's website, ibaradio.org. That's ibaradio, all one word, .org.
Ganga is made possible with a major grant from the National Science Foundation.
You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.